Okay, it's the 16th of December, 1998, and I'll go ahead and I wanted to ask a question because I think I interrupted you, and we kind of went off in a different direction. So I'll ask it again just to see if, you know, it does. We could have gone further with this question. What is the relationship of your earlier political activity and your current scientific activity?
What is the relationship? No. Both is me. And it seems in both my political activities, I put the same energy in as I put today in into science.
Okay.
And also, I think we use similar analytical tools or abilities as I use today in science. Planning what to do, what is possible, what's not possible. Dealing with people. I think in a way, still today, I want to lead my lab under similar terms as we did politics together, that we saw ourselves as different but equal. And yeah, but I think two different phases of me.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And how well have you been able to attract committed grad students and postdocs into your lab?
In the beginning, it was relatively easy. I was the new guy. I was seemed to do interesting stuff. I seemed to have enthusiasm. So grad students immediately were interested in what my lab was doing. And with my first postdocs, the first postdoc I had came from a lab I collaborated with, and she simply was interested in the stuff I'm doing and decided then to do a second postdoc in my lab. And the second postdoc I got was a grad student in the lab I did my postdoc. So I immediately in the beginning had very good people. And this, look, the moment you have good people, it's sort of other people become interested in what you are doing, and it's going by itself. However, with grad students, it was broken a little bit last year, and during that time I had two very gifted grad students doing their thesis in my lab. Evie is still in my lab, and she's really doing a very good job, and she will be able to finish whenever she wants. Mm-hmm. And the other grad students I really had major difficulties with. What happened was, he is really a very gifted person. However, one thing was strange. I had for the first 2 years he was in my lab, I had some strange gut feelings. What I did not like was that essentially I was his idol. And whatever I said was good, he simply eventually, I thought he does not see me critically enough. And so I never had a full equal relationship to him as I have it with other people in my lab. And also, when I asked him, what do you plan? What do you want? Whatever you say. It was very strange. And then, essentially what happened that from one to the next day, I was the enemy. And did not show up in the lab anymore. He did not talk anymore. He really went into a psychotic crisis, nearly classical. And here I still do not know what would have had the right way to behave. What happened was it was a very, very destructive period for the lab. Because everybody feared to see him around. And this was a period of perhaps 10 weeks. And everything what was good before was bad now, and people were, he really thought that we, specifically me, that I would be, how to say, his worst enemy. And only wanted bad things and wanted to sabotage his career, his life, his... Yeah, and... It was a very strange experience. And then suddenly it switched again, the climate. And then he was back in the lab, did not work from 10 to 6 in the morning, but had normal working hours again. And however, the communication was broken. I think he was so ashamed of what happened. And I still do not know whether I behaved the right way, essentially. He got then his PhD in 4 months and was gone. And no idea what he thinks today about me. Yeah, and it's really interesting in the follow that before this event with this grad student, people were knocking on my door whether they could rotate. Then with this event, suddenly it was over and now it's starting again. So as if in the grad school it would have been out that I'm a tough boss or what, or that there are difficulties in the lab. And grad students talk and so... Yeah. Look, a big change happened with my lab 2 years ago. What happened was I started up myself and had a small, very cozy lab, which was really in a way a dream lab to start up. knew I could do with this room whatever I wanted, and really it was cozy. And but it became a little bit too small. We became limited in this space, and so I was looking how I could expand a little bit. And another assistant professor during that time had lab space which was way too big for him. And so we decided to, because we liked this on a personal level, and we liked that why don't we move our labs together? And in the beginning we simply thought that we divide the lab in halves, and he has one half and I have the other half. And so essentially the my lab moved together with the lab of Lani Levin. And L-O-N-N-Y. And then a few things happened. What happened was that everybody predicted we would have difficulties to share lab space, and that there would be conflicts, and conflicts using space, conflicts using equipment. This never happened. In the beginning it started that we simply used shared pipettes, stuff like that. And what it led to, that after a year, essentially all the equipment stuff, all the money stuff became one. And why does it work with Lani? Because Lani is an extreme nice guy. He's a bright guy. And he knows what he wants. He has enough self-confidence that he does not have to use his elbows. And there are no ego problems. And he had his own functioning project. I had my own functioning project. And Lani and I, we have different backgrounds, different experiences. Lani is, from his education, what he did as a grad student, postdoc, and so on, a classical modern cloner. He's Lani knows how to deal with DNA, RNA, and whatever is involved with that. And this is one of my weaknesses. And I know much more biochemistry than Lani knows. I know how to deal with a protein, and not an expressed gene. Sometimes I know how to deal with lipids. He has no idea. And so what happened was that whenever his people had problems with biochemistry, they started to come to me, and I started to send my people to him whenever cDNA, DNA, RNA was involved. And so essentially, Lani and I do not have two labs anymore. We have one lab. Lani has his own project, where he has his own funding officially for. I have my own project. And then, we started to do stuff together. And this is the first result of that is this soluble cyclase project. And in the foreseeable future, essentially, we plan to stay like that, and that a quarter of the lab is doing my retroretinoid enzyme work, a quarter of the effort of the lab is going into his adenyl cyclase, membrane adenyl cyclase work, and half of the effort in the near future will go in our common project of following up on this new finding of this soluble adenyl cyclase. Yeah.
Okay. And why engage? Now, this is a different type of collaboration than I think, why see most Pew scholars engage in, but you also engage in also traditional kinds of collaboration.
Oh, definitely.
And what is the reason to collaborate for you?
Look, the absolute good classical collaboration is, for example, my collaboration with Fadila Dalgini. Fadila is an excellent natural product chemist. And she's one of the few persons who is able to determine, let's say, the structure of a vitamin A derivative if you give her 5 micrograms of pure substance. And that's her specialty. And that is where what she does for me. I purify a retinoid for her. This is what I'm an expert in. And she can do the structure. So, look, a collaboration is ideal when two groups work together which have complementary knowledge and where they can help each other. Then it works extremely well. Collaborations normally do not work out when groups have the same knowledge, use the same techniques, then immediately jealousy will start and that's not work. Yeah.
And I know from your CV that you continued, even after you left Sloan Kettering, to engage in collaborations with Hamerling and co-authored papers
right.
from other students with other students in his lab
right.
who were working on vitamin A derivatives.
Right.
And when does collaboration turn into competition?
Okay. I'm not even sure. Yes, 2 years ago. 1 year ago, I would told you that I'm in competition with Hamerling. I would not say that today anymore.
Okay.
What happened was that for the first 2-3 years I was at Cornell, there were still loose ends which started when I was a postdoc in his lab. And we did that stuff together. And this led to many of the publications which were done when I was independent, and he's still co-author of the opposite that I was on his papers. And when I left, we tried to split the field which we together founded. We tried to split it up, that it was clear in which direction he goes, in which direction I go. And you are right, there was a time of competition, or of bad feelings. And this was the time when it seemed that a postdoc in my lab had made a major breakthrough. And that, which by the way, did not work out. And
the breakthrough or
it was no breakthrough, it was a dead end in the end. But what happened was that Hamerling tried like crazy to have his fingers in it.
Mm.
And it was a little bit like that, that it seemed that most new ideas are happening on this side of the street and nothing would come from his side. Mm. So, however, it's not like that anymore because it was always clear that the enzyme work is done on my side, and the first enzyme in the retroretinoid field was purified and cloned here at Cornell, and this took off by itself. And what Uli is doing today in the retroretinoid field is stuff he's fascinated with, but I cannot get any enthusiasm for it, so it's good, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And what is it about you that makes this kind of unique relationship with Alon 11 work?
What's on my side?
Yeah, what is it with you? What abilities or strengths and weaknesses do you have that makes this collaboration?
what is my why does it work? You know, one thing is totally clear, that or it's very, very unlikely that if I find new stuff together with Lani, that this would not be on equal terms. It's absolutely clear that this work we have here exists only because we met on an equal level. And it's absolutely clear that Lani has equal contributions to that work than I have. And I do not have any fear here that he would try to take all credit for himself, or I think he does not have any fear that I would not recognize him. No, you know, he is, this is our work. And we developed a relationship where we can criticize each other and we can be of total different opinions without hurting the other. I can say to Lani, that's totally wrong. I even can say to him, you are an idiot, and he never would take me serious if I would say you are an idiot. You know, it's perhaps two personalities met who can work with each other. It seems like to me.
And is this a case where two creative scientists are coming together, or two scientists, one with more creative abilities and one with more technical abilities, complement each other?
Lani is good. He's creative. Okay. And he has we are different. Okay. Clear cut, we are different personalities. Lani talks much more than I do. He bullshits much more than I do. Everybody knows Lani. However, Lani is a very good and creative scientist. Lani is much more organized than I am. I mean now, organized in the sense of you simply would have to compare our offices. My office is a mess. His office is totally clean. And if you would ask Lani, where is this article, he could send you up now and you would find it. If you would ask me, where is this article, I would say, it should be somewhere. And we would have to look for it ourselves. And it could be that you would stand there for 20 minutes and I still would look around. Yeah. You know, I could learn here from Lani, but it's not me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a lot of fun to have, to go, Lani and I, we go out on a regular base 3 times a week for pizza. And our lunch meetings are simply scientifically good, and personally. And this is where a lot of things are happening. Essentially outside the lab, talking about whatever goes through our minds, and sometimes really new ideas develop there, or yeah, most of our decisions happen there.
Well, you've had experience in kind of the German style of science, mm-hmm. of doing biomedical research,
mm-hmm.
and you've certainly had experience doing American styles of biomedical research. And it seems to me that this collaboration where you've taken two PIs and joined their labs is somewhat, not unheard of, but unique in terms of how most American laboratories are set
mm-hmm.
up.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think are the implications of how you are doing science for how American science in general is run, or how American laboratory science is structured?
You know, I'm convinced that the way Lani and I, we have it in the moment, that it's not essentially two labs which add up. I think that in a way we are synergistic.
Okay.
And so hopefully we have more than additive results.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Clear cut, we can do stuff neither of us could do.
But having two PIs is at the helm.
Look, that's
not. Do you see that being unique, or?
I do not know of a situation like that, at least here in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
However, look, it's no problem because I still have my. Look, we have a very simple deal to the outside. Wherever retroretinoids are involved, I'm senior author. Finished.
Okay.
Wherever membrane cyclases are involved, even if I would do the majority of the work, it's Lani's. Wherever soluble cyclase is involved, for the first paper, we decided that we make first and last, and we were throwing a coin. And from now on, simply last authorship will switch. And it's a total chance event. Who gets the better paper?
Okay.
But so what? It's ours, you know?
Right, right.
So, yeah.
And then how does it work for grad students and postdocs and where they fall in on
the
scholarship line?
Okay. For them, whoever does the most of the creative work is first author.
Okay.
Yeah. Totally independent whether they are officially paid by my money or by his money. Look, for example, last year I had about double the amount of money than Lani had. But so what? I simply paid his people with part of my money. So, yeah.
Yeah. And how do students react or postdocs react when they come to work for Levine or work for you and...
Most of them like it.
And end up working on somebody else's project.
Most of them like it. However, there's a small problem. And this has to do now with grad students. Our grad students here at Cornell normally have their committee. Supervisory committee, and this committee is made out of the primary investigator in whose lab the student is, and additionally two independent faculty members, which should help the student to go through the project. And now with the students in our lab, most of the time they want both of us on the committee, so there's only one independent. And this is what long-term Lani and I have to think a little bit through. Because as long as it works well between the student, Lani, and me, that's no problem at all. But it could become a problem the moment there are difficulties. And where else do I foresee difficulties? The department has absolutely nothing against it. The other junior guys may be a little bit jealous. Yeah. Look, it cannot be generalized. It happened here in this situation in time, and it seems to work in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with the junior guys jealous, do you think that this perhaps might be a model for them to follow?
Look, to be honest, I could not imagine with any of the other young people in the department to do it with them.
Mm.
So I could not do it with any of them.
Yeah.
So... Look, Lani and I are persons who are relatively open, not so protective of our staff, you know. So.
Okay. Well, I guess to pursue this into a new area with this kind of synergistic structure, how do you divide up things and account for monies and resources, lab resources for grant agencies?
Not at all.
Okay.
What's happening is we play the game.
Okay, and what's that game?
To get money for our lab. And, you know, essentially, I'm writing my retroretinoid glands, he's writing his membrane cyclase glands, and then we write together the soluble cyclase glands and hope that two out of the three areas are funded. As long as that is the case, we are living well, you know?
Yeah.
And simply the money will go in a pot and will be used by whomever, you know? So...
Okay. Well, I'm going to be jumping around just because of the time, and I guess to continue on, you had mentioned yesterday that the Pew has this knack, has been able to collect a group of really creative scientists, and how much do you think the selection committee, the advisory committee, and those who are making the decisions of choosing who becomes a Pew Scholar plays a role in bringing these creative scientists together?
Look, they choose us.
Okay, but, yeah. I'm getting back to something we talked about in depth, I think, yesterday, is does one creative scientist sense in another creativity, or is it, you know, being able to hedge your bets and the Pew has, by the toss of the dice, been able to choose creative scientists?
This is an extreme tough call, and I tell you why. Because when I say that I can sense other creative people, then I can sense them when I'm in the same room with them and when I talk with them.
Mm-hmm.
On paper, it's extreme tough.
Okay.
Now, I'm pretty sure that I one of the reasons that I was chosen as a Pew was that Ron Evans knew me.
Okay.
Also, and so... I bet that was of an advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, do you think, what other granting, funding organizations or granting agencies out there, whether it's public agencies or private agencies, are funding creative science, do you think?
Creative science?
Yeah, what other agencies are out there funding creative science?
Now, look, that's an extreme tough question because I would say NIH, the typical RO1 funding, they do not fund the creative stuff.
Okay.
However, they fund us. Look, if you think now that I have the... this a little bit pretentious assumption that we do that all our stuff is creative, which look, we play the game. Essentially, all the money I ever got from NIH was essentially for the most boring grants I wrote, and I still did not learn my lesson here because. What happened was that NIH funded me for characterizing the first retroretinoid using enzyme, a project which in my opinion went extremely well, and then for the competitive renewal I wrote my ideas in what direction I thought it should go. And this thing was killed. And at the same time, 3 months before, the same study section gave me a total boring grant. And you know what I will do with this, with my enzyme grant now, with the coming renewal, I will write in the experimental part of this grant application a proposal which will work if as done as proposed, where already 80% of the data are in, and which essentially could be done in 2 years, and I will make it to a 5-year period, in the hope that they give me money for 5 years, that I can use it to do with it, to put it in the pool, and that we can do whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so what was the lesson to be learned then, after you got your rejection?
No, essentially, the lesson to be learned is a lesson which I do not want to learn. But
okay.
Which, and it's the following, that simply propose non-innovative stuff. Stuff I'm sure about, which should work. And don't write any speculations about ideas which would change the world. Don't, typical example. I proposed that there is a new sort of cell death out in insects. What do I get back as a criticism? There is already one sort of cell death well characterized in insects. Why do we need a second one? Come on. This is creative, you know? And...
So as second type of cell death, rather than the apoptotic model that we understand now?
Yeah. My assumption here is the following, that the anhydroretinol is inducing cell death, and it does not have the features of apoptotic cell death. And a lot of anhydroretinol is produced in early pupation. And early pupation in insects is the time you have this larvae, this wiggling worm, which then suddenly decides not to eat anymore, to stick to a branch, to become a pupae. And then you get this really beautiful... new creature developing. What does have this later the butterfly or the moth? What does, that's a totally different organism than this wiggling worm, you know. But in between, they do not eat. So what's happening is that during early pupation, 95% of the cells die, and it's not apoptotic, and they make a sort of yolk. And this yolk is then used to make new, to make the new organism. And all our data hint that if anhydro really is involved, or maybe involved in this event, and that would be different from apoptosis.
Yeah. So did you resubmit this grant?
You know, I will resubmit it, but I will switch study section. And
okay.
Now, why do I switch study section? Because I think two things came together with this study section. The study section already gave me money and thinks that I'm relatively well-funded, at least, yeah. And so it's better to have it in another study section. And the study section I'm trying to channel it to now has members which should be friendly to the ideas I have.
Okay, what study section is that?
The new nutrition study section became suddenly... It looks like it became a good study section.
Mm-hmm.
The nutrition study section was an awful study section. Very nutrition-centered.
Okay, I was going to say. So
right.
How will they be interested in your work?
Why? Because as a nutrition study section, they are interested in vitamins.
Okay.
And now... look, the retinoid work is vitamin A work. What's happening to vitamin A? And this is why we can send it to the nutrition study section.
Okay, yeah. So, well, besides changing study sections, how will you rewrite your proposal in order to get it funded?
Okay. One thing is, I take my fly stuff out because NIH, according to many study sections, still have difficulties to fund research which is not done in humans or mammals. The other thing is, I write an absolutely clear-cut proposal A, B, C, D, E, F, which in itself is logical, and contrary to what I would have done a few years ago, I do not write anymore about parts where I really foresee difficulties. I only write now about parts where I have solutions, you know? If I can predict a difficulty, I write about it. If I know, can tell them, if this happens, I will do this. However, I, in a way, I'm not as honest anymore as I was. Yeah.
And what's that, how do you account for that?
You know, the way, you have to see that study sections, these people are overflooded with material and they want to take stuff apart. And if they've, whatever honest application you write, you will find points you can criticize. So, don't give them the opportunities.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do you think accounts for this situation which NIH is funding boring science?
You know, I would not say it as strong as that. I think that they really try hard. And I believe that the most members of study sections try hard. However, look, there are also many political restrictions. You have to know, study sections must represent members, must have members from all over the country. They must have as many women as possible, as many minorities as possible, as many people from Arkansas as that they are represented. Look, if you have to make study sections under this context, that really all universities are similarly represented, if you also see that many good people do not have enough time to do it, it's tough to get good peers, you know? And it's tough.
Okay, let me flip this over.